We are in a recession if you don't count NVIDIA, Microsoft, OpenAI, whatever, all giving each other handsies in a circle. That's like, that is the only reason they keep trading each other $100 billion back and forth, and that's how you get the economy. That's how you get like a nominal stock market gain. We got net zero job growth. Oh, buddy, you don't even know.
I'm really, really not happy about this inflation report.
All right.
And I know it's one data point. The Fed looks through it. We try to look at 2 or 3 month trends. But this does not look good to me. And I don't like sitting here after everything we're talking about and saying, oh.
Look at that, man. 3.9% year over year. Plus 0.5% month over month. That is crazy. Oh, man.
Well, okay, but it's just 1 month because unfortunately March is guaranteed 95% chance to get worse than what we saw. So core goods prices are up by 0.3%. You're up 4.3% year over year. That's just core goods.
Yeah, this data is from before Iran. This data is from over February, not March. So this isn't even factoring in everything that's going to happen because of the increased fuel prices.
Goods prices. Mm-hmm. Services inflation was up 0.6% in December, 0.8% in January, 0.5% in February. It's going down, but it's still increasing overall. Year over year, we're up 3.8% year over year. What I don't like is that prices rose in food, alcohol, investment advice securities, which we could talk about, fuels, trucking, inpatient care. Now, they fell for apparel and footwear, but they're rising, and I don't like it. Fresh and dry vegetables were 49%.
Wow. Holy, that's actually a lot. That's a big number. Sheesh.
So there's something going on. Maybe it's a one-off that we could debate, but I don't like the trend, and I don't like that we're going to sit here and think that March is going to get worse.
Well, I agree.
God damn, man. God damn. That is really, really, really bad.
But the thing that I think...
And we're not... Again, this isn't even factoring in what's happening right now. We're going to talk. The largest liquid natural gas plant on Earth is on fire right now. So increase in fuel costs affect everything. We struck Iranian fossil fuel infrastructure earlier today, and they retaliated. It's going to get a lot worse. I think, is it Omar? Omar is buying right now at nearly $200 a barrel. Oman. Yeah, thank you. No. There's a reason I started stream later today, okay? It's not up here. It's not going good. Not going good up here. What did Omar do? Ilhan Omar is a queen and she knows her worth. That's why the price is going up.
I think good number of people on the committee are concerned about is just the very, very low level of job creation. If you adjust what has been the trend job creation over the past, let's say, 6 months, if you adjust that for what we think, our staff thinks, is the overstatement due to overcounting, effectively there's zero net job creation in the private sector. But actually,
even counting healthcare and services, healthcare and elderly care, all that, hospitality services, even counting that,
actually, that looks like that's about what the economy needs in terms of dealing with very, very low, non-existent, really, growth in the labor force, which, of course, we've never had in our history. So you've got a sort of a zero employment growth equilibrium.
The crazy thing is, despite all of this, once Powell is replaced, I bet you they're going to cut rates again. They're going to do it again. I guarantee you. Even though right now the market is screaming, please, God, hike those rates. I guarantee you. They're going to bring those, going to bring that shit right back down, just like Jeffrey Epstein wanted.
Now, that's balance, okay? But, I would say it does have a feel of downside risk, and it's not kind of a really comfortable balance. So, but the thing...
here. I think the most alarmist take that I saw was this clip from CNBC, which, I mean, you can just read the tone. Read the
What does that tell you? I mean, I understand the short term we're taking the Fed activity out from the 2 year, and that's why you see those spreads kind of get compressed. The long end, does that tell you anything about how people are seeing the health of the economy down the road, or is it something else?
I do think that there is part of that reflected in this as well. It's almost the worst of both worlds. I guess stagflation would come close to describing the situation. We're probably not going to see Fed easing. And the long end, well, part of it is weakness. We've had a spat of some fairly weak numbers, and then you put in the fact that we are on the PCE, you know, 3% handle on some of the Fed's favorite metrics, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out today. It would be very difficult, even for some of the recent appointees, to think that easing could even be on the menu at this or even very close subsequent meetings down the road.
Stagflation is a super, super, super nasty word because it means that the Federal Reserve doesn't really have a way of fixing the problem. Normally, if you have a weak market, you know, you can lower rates and juice up the economy to the extent that that works, which in a highly financialized market, dubious, right? The idea that businesses are taking loans so they can expand and hire new people, no, they're fucking not. But, you know, that's the common logic. But on the other hand, if you have higher inflation, you can't lower rates without worsening the inflation. So the Fed doesn't really have a way of fixing things. And it's looking quite bad. Wholesale prices rose 0.7% in February. 0.7% in February. The PPI, a measure of pipeline costs that producers receive for their products, increased a seasonally adjusted 0.7% on the month. The core PPI was up 0.5%. Food prices rose 2.4%, energy up 2.7%. Yes, the fresh and dry vegetables index up 50% somehow. I don't know. So I guess maybe that at some point, maybe in the fighting in the Middle East, Iran struck like the biggest vegetable producing facility in the world. I don't know how that happened, but you sure up 50%. Why not? Fertilizer? This is before that. All of this is from February. It's before the war in Iran. How could they realistically incentivize definancialization? Why would they do that? They would never do that. They're the people doing the financialization. The elites would rather start a nuclear war than definancialize. They will never do it. He molested the gourds. Yeah. Food price 2.4%, energy 2.3% before the war began. Oh. Later Wednesday, the Fed will release its latest interest rate decision. Market participants consider it a near certainty that central bankers will vote to keep their benchmark overnight interest rate anchored in a range between 3.5 to 3.75%, where it has been since the last cut. Once Powell's out, man. Once Powell's out, I'm telling you. Fruit and vegetable costs are going up because we're importing more from a limited supply out of Mexico. The real food and vegetable prices, fruit and vegetable prices, but food in general, is going to go up the next time there's a big climate catastrophe. The heat wave that's hitting like half of America right now, stuff like that, a big winter storm, you're going to lose like a whole bunch of agricultural output. Gonna really drive up the cost. Some fruits are going to become luxury goods again. I just bought a juice press too. Oranges are going to be like $3 per orange. I'm not going to be able to make orange juice. $20 bell peppers, yeah. Oh, well. I already had to stop buying cabbage because my store doesn't have it anymore. Cabbage? Jesus Christ, that's grim. How's America doing? Oh, you know, it's okay. Once the cabbage rations hit, actually, there was more to go around. Jesus Christ. Well, and I want to see CNBC wax poetic a little while longer on this because these numbers really are pretty terrible. Hold on. Teeing up trading day, top panel in the Fed. SEC clarifies crypto position.
For a closer look at those PPI numbers we just got, the implications for the markets, for the Feds.
I know a lot of people find this boring, but I'm telling you guys, when historians are writing about the collapse of the American Empire, a lot of it is going to be focused on stuff like this. There's going to be this is going to be like on the test. When students of history 100 years from now are going to be, you know, when they're taught what happened to us, they're dusting this shit off.
Bring in former St. Louis Fed President James Bullard. He is now the dean of the Mitch Daniels School of Business at Purdue University. And Dean Bullard, thank you for being with us. You know, it's not all that often that Steve Leisman and Rick Santelli see things the exact same way, but that's pretty much what happened with the PPI numbers that we just got. They both looked at it and said, really, warm report no matter which way you look at it. And both of them came to the same conclusion that any Fed official, no matter who you are appointed by, is going to have a hard time cutting interest rates as you look at numbers like that. Do you agree as well?
The most boring possible way of putting that assertion, but yes.
Yeah, well, why not make it a trifecta? I agree with Rick and Steve on this. I think this was a hot report. It's just one report, but, you know, a disturbing trend toward somewhat higher inflation where
right,
the committee has
No,
been.
You're right. I actually can't. It's actually less interesting to listen to than Powell, so
this
I'll
is,
just listen to
Fed
Powell.
Chair Jerome Powell taking the podium.
Good afternoon. My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment and stable prices for the benefit of the American people.
And brother, it is not going well.
The U.S. economy has been expanding at a solid pace. While job gains have remained low, the unemployment rate has been little changed in recent months, and inflation remains somewhat elevated. Today, the FOMC decided to leave our policy rate unchanged. We see the current stance of monetary policy as appropriate to promote progress toward our maximum employment and 2% inflation goals. The implications of developments in the Middle East for the U.S. economy are uncertain. We will remain attentive to risks to both sides of our dual mandate. And I'll have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments.
Why do people pretend the Fed can fix inflation with higher rates? The Fed can. That's the thing the Fed can do. The problem is the Fed can no longer juice the economy and lower unemployment by lowering interest rates. It used to be that when you lowered interest rates, you made it easier to borrow money, so companies would borrow money and expand their business. They'd be like, oh, it's only like 2% interest on this loan. I'll take that, get a new franchise open, and then blah, 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 hire new people. Nowadays, though, because what's that metric? The labor force percent of total wealth disseminated through labor payroll, something, less and less money is high velocity. It doesn't make its way down through the economy. So they just keep it up there in the big, you know, financial fucking circle jerk chamber. You don't really lower unemployment by lowering interest rates anymore. They would just, yeah, they'll just do their fucking stock buybacks. They'll just invest and leverage their existing assets.
Available indicators suggest that economic activity has been expanding at a solid pace.
The jerk zone? It is the jerk zone.
Consumer spending has been resilient and business fixing.
So then why not just have high interest rates? I mean, I don't know. How much do you want to pay for rent in 10 years? Because a 4% like average annual interest rate year over year means that in 10 years, your rent will cost more than 50% more what it does right now.
Investment has continued to expand. In contrast, activity in the housing sector has remained weak. In our summary of economic projections, the median participant projects that real GDP will rise 2.4% this year and 2.3% next year, somewhat stronger than projected in December.
Maybe, though it is worth noting that every single private like hedge fund that I've seen, every bank, they've all lowered their estimates for the annual increase to GDP for this year, with some of them now leaning in the negative.
In the labor market, the unemployment rate was 4.4% in February and has changed little since late last summer. Job gains have remained low. A good part of the slowing in the pace of job growth over the past year reflects a decline in the growth of the labor force due to lower immigration and labor force participation, though labor demand has clearly softened as well.
Crypto?
Other indicators,
I'm sure,
including job
fine.
Openings, layoffs, hiring and nominal wage growth generally show little change in recent months. In our SEP, the median projection of the unemployment rate is 4.4% at the end of this year and edges down thereafter. Inflation has eased significantly from its highs in mid-2022,
yeah,
but remains somewhat elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates,
dog, it's nearly double the 2% longer-run goal right now.
Based on the Consumer Price Index and other data, indicate that total PCE prices rose 2.8% over the 12 months ending in February, and that excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 3.0%. These elevated readings largely reflect inflation in the goods sector, which has been boosted by the effects of tariffs. Near-term measures of inflation expectations have risen in recent weeks, likely reflecting the substantial rise in oil prices caused by the supply disruptions in the Middle East. Most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation this year is 2.7% and 2.2% next year.
I'm not listening to Powell. You should listen to Powell, because this is the last chance you're going to get for a while to listen to a Fed chair who's not a psychopath. The next guy up, friends with Epstein, appointed directly by Trump after Trump 2. The next guy is going to be talking like fucking RFK Jr. up there. The next Fed chair is going to be posting like GM, you know, crypto memes to Twitter every day. The next Fed chair is going to be putting out like AI hype videos on the economy.
A bit higher than projected in December. Our monetary policy
take it in while you can,
is
what I'm saying.
Our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. At today's meeting, the committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 3.5% to 3.75%. From last September through December, we lowered our policy rate 0.75 percentage point, bringing it within a range of plausible estimates of neutral. This normalization of our policy stance should continue to help stabilize the labor market while allowing inflation to resume its downward trend toward 2%. But the implications of events in the Middle East for the U.S. economy are uncertain. Mm-hmm. In the near term, higher energy prices will push up overall inflation, but it is too soon to know the scope and duration of the potential effects on the economy. We will continue to monitor the risks to both sides of our mandate. We are well positioned to determine the extent and timing of additional adjustments to our policy rate based on the incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. In our SEP, FOMC participants wrote down their individual assessments of an appropriate path of the federal funds rate under what each participant judges to be the most likely scenario for the economy. The median participant projects that the appropriate level of the federal funds rate will be 3.4% at the end of this year and 3.1% at the end of next year, unchanged from December.
Fucking hell, I miss when politics sound like that. Not to get too tut-tutty, but just keep in mind that the apocalypse track that our country's headed on right now was established and set, like the course was set by people who talk like this, you know? Quantitative easing, extremely low interest rates, over-financialization of the economy, all of these things were set in motion by people like Jeremy Powell. Like, the only difference is that we've grown, you know, we've grown fat and arrogant, so now the people in charge are too stupid to understand how fragile the whole thing really is. But we were gonna hit the wall, you know, no matter what, I think, eventually. Oh yeah, Lululemon's up. That's nice. That's great. Maybe the optimal neocon could have kept the game running for a little while longer, but not by much, I don't think. Not by much. What does all this mean for the average person? Bad economy? Bad economy? I don't know. Is your bad economy? How old are you? Do you remember 2008? Rice and beans? Yeah, stuff being pricey? I don't know. I mean, a lot of stuff, really, potentially. I was 3 years old in 2008. Jesus Christ. It's unfortunate that admins like this make administrations like Bush's look like strategic geniuses by comparison, because I feel like it means we'll be back there soon enough. Yeah, well, the fucked up thing for me is that a lot of people are going to look back on this point in history and think that it was Trump's boorishness and arrogance that caused these problems. But, like, our refusal to engage in detente with Iran and our destabilization of the Middle East, that's been policy for decades. Sure, Trump blew it up, but like we were the ones putting the oil kegs over there. The over-financialization of the economy, our incredible reliance on like reliable stock market gains to prop the economy up. Like, as a good example, there are multiple, some might even say most, European economies, perfectly pleasant places to live, but their economies have been basically stagnant since 2008. Like, our economy falters when it looks like we're not going to get a reliable 3% year over year. But, you know, Spain, France, Germany, whatever, like their stock market returns have consistently been much lower. And somehow, in spite of that, they seem to have more money to spend on social services. Like they're actually, in terms of their livability, they're actually better. It's because we rely so much on financialization. The only way to make money here in America is like OnlyFans, get lucky with Bitcoin, you know, polymarket bets, and if you already have $1 billion, you can leverage that for a loan to invest in for guaranteed returns in the stock market. The payout's greater than what you paid in the interest, so you just make infinite money off that. It's like so much more than you could ever get just residing off interest payments, you know? Tech surveillance. Get into tech surveillance. Go drop out of high school, move to San Francisco, develop an AI surveillance app that takes photos of people's buttholes while they're using the toilet, sell it to the U.S. government, make a mint, you're rich. That's how you make money in America, okay? Over in, like, I don't know, France, I think you make money by opening a business and then you sell stuff at the business. I could be wrong on that. I'm oversimplifying a little bit, but it's real. Like, this is, and it's the reason, I don't want to do the big thing. This doesn't have to be a 20-minute tangent or whatever, but this is the reason why Japan's economy works very differently. Their fear of accruing debt, which is a core component of over-financialization, because that's how you leverage the interest rate, you know, being lowered, and acquire new money quickly and cheaply. In Japan, the economy works differently. Their fear of that over-financialization means that more of the total money supply in the economy circulates through their actual, like, business, their labor, their wages. Japan's about to goddamn collapse. Japan's economic problems have nothing to do with the fact that they have a relatively definancialized economy. That's the thing that keeps them strong. Keep in mind that in spite of their massive national debt, they have an incredibly strong economy. There are problems with their economy, but the thing I'm describing is like the one good thing about their economy. The fact that the majority of the money in their wealth supply circulates. I don't doubt you, but why do you know all this stuff? Because doesn't it feel weird that America is the wealthiest country on earth, but it's impossible to get healthcare and all of the properties downtown are shuttered and everything's up for lease, but nobody's buying it. And there's tons and tons of empty like apartments and like leased office buildings, but they're all incredibly expensive. And everything that you loved when you were a kid was closing down and everything is getting more expensive, even though you think logically the technology that we use to produce stuff would have improved to the point where it's cheaper for us to get it. Like, this is why it is. It's not like magic. There's nothing about the allocation of resources that we've chosen to invest in, the way we've structured our economy. It facilitates all of this, you know? Yeah, the richest third world economy. It doesn't have to be like this. Leaving aside a bunch of other problems Japan has, and boy, do they have problems. It is a fact that more of their money makes its way through the traditional economic mode, which is you have a business, they pay money in wages, the workers have the wages, they spend it on their rent and their groceries and blah, 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 and then the people they spend the money, they give the money to, they spend it and it circulates and da, da, da. That's how the economy worked for thousands of years. Only recently, only very recently, has it become possible for the majority of circulated wealth in economy to just be eight AI companies jerking each other off. Because that's the American economy right now. We are in a recession if you don't count NVIDIA, Microsoft, OpenAI, whatever, all giving each other handsies in a circle. That's like, that is the only reason. They keep trading each other $100 billion back and forth, and that's how you get the economy. That's how you get like a nominal stock market gain. It's important to know this stuff. And my understanding of it is very superficial. There are people who know far, 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 far more than I do. I'm only like touching on the basics. I am like a hardline advocate against debt as a concept and in favor of financial or monetary velocity. That's my big kick, you know? I love monetary velocity. I love that shit. Mmm, yummy.
As is always the case, these individual forecasts are subject to uncertainty, and they are not a committee plan or decision. Monetary policy is not on a preset course, and we'll make our decisions on a meeting-by-meeting basis. To conclude, the Fed has been assigned two goals for monetary policy: maximum employment and stable prices. We remain committed to supporting maximum employment, bringing inflation sustainably to our 2% goal, and keeping longer-term inflation expectations well anchored. Our success in delivering on these goals matters to all Americans. We at the Fed will continue to do our jobs with objectivity.
Okay, Vosh, that's kind of a contradictory belief you hold about Japan. The money circulates, but also they save money. Saving money is the opposite of money moving around. You are correct on that. They do save money. That is true. But I do think that it is better and healthier for the economy if the reserve, the money that's kept in a dragon's hoard, is saved through actual transactions, like you make the money and then hold the money, rather than through stock market speculation. Or in other words, there's a big difference between a company amassing an enormous amount of money through investment and a company amassing an enormous amount of money because they have a reserve of cash. It's kind of like how most governments don't have a sovereign wealth fund, you know? Like, America doesn't really have one. America doesn't have a service or a product that it sells that it can just hold the profits from and sit on. We just mint money from our treasury. Gulf states, Saudi Arabia has an enormous sovereign wealth fund. Norway, you know, it's usually through oil wealth, right? That's the big one. It is true. You don't want to save too much money, right? Because if you save too much money, it's not moving around the economy. But I would prefer saving money to, like, you know, the schemes we've got going on over here. It's like the worst version of that problem, I think. But that's what inflation's for. That's why you need a small, like, annual rate of inflation. 2-3%. Try to keep the, you know, the numbers running.
Integrity. And a deep commitment to serve the American people. Thank you.
We were at the end. Wonderful. Phenomenal. Thank you.
So the Federal Reserve came into this year a little nervous about the economic outlook.
You basically just argued for investing into companies that are productive rather than put money in a big hoard? Yeah, I mean, there's a pretty big difference, right? Especially if you had a stock market that was more, I guess, robust in its allocation of dividends. You know, if a company has a lot of money, I want it to be because they sold a lot of stuff and not because they tricked a bunch of investors and are just holding on to that speculation, and everyone's trading on the secondary market. The share price is skyrocketing all because everyone's looking to be the guy who rug pulls everyone else. That's not good. That's not a good economy. I think money should be where productivity is. I think the money should be where the products and services and employment and wages are. The more money a company has, the more money it should be paying out to its employees. There should always be, like, there should be a circulation of the wealth, you know? So Apple is better than OpenAI? For sure, 100%, absolutely, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Apple's still an evil company, but Apple is way, way, way more structurally stable than these fucking AI bubble companies. For sure, 100%. Start at 502? Yeah, how long is this? Let me see. Okay, it's pretty long. Don't know how much patience chat has for, like, finance autism.
To conclude, the Fed has been assigned two goals for monetary policy: maximum employment and stable prices. We remain committed to supporting maximum employment, bringing inflation, integrity,
that will come from... Thank you. Colby Smith of the New York Times. There's been some debate about whether the Fed should look through the inflation that will come from higher oil prices stemming from the Middle East conflict. Is that the right approach at this juncture? And to what extent does the fact that inflation has been above target for roughly 5 years now influence the committee's thinking around this?
So, first, let me say we're well aware of the performance of inflation over the last few years and how a series of shocks have interrupted progress that we've made over time. And that happened most recently with tariffs, and now there will be some effects on inflation coming forward. The thing that's really important that we see this year is progress on inflation.
You shouldn't be allowed to sell your stock. I'm just anti-stock market pill in general at this point. I think that it's a really, really, really toxic way of building early capital for an investment. I think you can find systems for providing capital for businesses that don't rely on speculation. I mean, I guess there's always a speculative element to any kind of loan, right? Because you're betting they won't like go bankrupt and default on it. That's always going to be the case. But I guess the question is like, can you find a way of getting money where it needs to go without providing people the tools to make more money off of the borrowing and leveraging of the wealth and the debt rather than actually producing anything? You know? If you're against debt and you're against equity, what's the solution here? Okay, one thing at a time, right? I am against debt, sure, but I think that you could have a system where businesses that need it get loans, like through banks, without creating these knock-on effects that allow you to make more money off of financialization than you do off of the actual business that you're supposed to be getting the money for. I think you can do that. I mean, I know you can do that. I'm understating my case here. You can do that. It's totally possible. It's just that like the stock market is a really, 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 really good way of siphoning wealth from the bottom to the top. It's a phenomenal system for doing that. It's an unbelievable system because it's a big casino and the house always, always wins. Not only do you have, you roll two big systems into one. On one hand, you get to, have a system where, you know, if they choose, companies can raise capital for their interests. But at the same time, you get to bring everyone in. You get to get everyone invested in a system whereby the perceived value of these companies, these publicly traded companies, is now monetarily worthwhile to average people. Take, for example, American retirement funds. Your retirement funds get automatically invested in the market. What does this do? Well, it adds trillions to the market cap, for one, because everyone's money is getting invested in it, like, for free. But now, you need to care about the stock market, bucko, because if it crashes, so too do your retirement funds. Like those Trump accounts that he's so proud of, you know, like your baby's born, you invest $1,000, and all of it is just a way of taking money and putting it into the stock market. And the more money there is in the stock market, the more money there is for hedge funds and day traders to play around with, which inevitably in the long run favors them. There is, to my knowledge, no point in history where the stock market has on average led to a transfer of wealth from the wealthy to the poor. It has never happened. There has never been a point where that has happened. Not even for like middle class people. The wealth does not flow downward. It just does not work that way. Very parasitic system.
Through a reduction in goods inflation, as the one-time effects on prices of tariffs go through the system, go through the economy. That's the main thing we're looking for going into this exercise. And we need to be seeing that to sort of understand that we actually are making progress, because on net, we didn't make progress.
But as long as we live in a capitalist system, investing your long-term savings into a mutual fund will individually be the optimal thing to do? Sure, but if we lived in like a mercantile system, then offering a blood oath to the Lord, his royalty, the king, so that he might, upon the crowning of your firstborn son as an adult, give you one minted silver coin from his treasure. Like, that is also the optimal decision within, like, I mean, sure, right. Like, they build the system so that it's optimal to participate in a Ponzi scheme that they benefit from, for sure. But that's the problem. You have to change the incentives, you know? I don't think you're a bad person for investing in the stock market. This is such a high level, like, systemic failure. Everyone's just trying to make it by, especially now. I mean, the economy's, you know, it's not like an individual. It's not judging you or anything. It's just like the incentive structures have to change, man. They're really, really, really bad.
Look at total core inflation. It's about 3%, and some big chunk of that, between a half and three quarters, is actually tariffs. So we're looking for progress on that. The question of whether we look through the energy inflation doesn't really arise until we have kind of checked that box. It, of course, is kind of standard learning that you look through energy shocks, but that's always been dependent on inflation expectations remaining well anchored. And I think now it's also dependent on...
I'm a little behind, but the stock market takes are super naive. Unfortunately, broader participation should be the goal, and it's not like a casino because the odds are in your favor long term. Respectfully, you're being... Allah forgive me for uttering this word in public, very liberal. Your outcomes may look good long term because the American stock market guarantees consistent year-over-year returns based on a like the continuation of a massive number of very expensive and very like demanding policies that ensure it keeps going up. The idea that the stock market keeps going up forever or that it outpaces inflation, there's nothing on earth that guarantees that. We have maximized our outcomes in that field. But just because something is individually beneficial to you, that doesn't mean that it benefits everyone. Boomers who bought their house for $50K back in 1973, who are now sitting on a $2 million property in California, those people have benefited from the incredible rise in property prices in California. It is to their benefit that the property price has risen. But society as a whole suffers. And just because you benefit from putting money in the stock market and seeing returns doesn't mean that the overall distribution of wealth in the economy is favoring you. It's going the other way. You know? It's going in the other direction. So, like, it's that's the big trick, right? That's the great lie. Every individual proletarian is like, ooh, yay, my year-over-year returns. Ooh, I've slightly outpaced inflation. Meanwhile, of the not infinite amount of wealth in the economy, a greater and greater percentage of it goes up there. So like you celebrate your scraps, and I mean, maybe it works out well for you, right? You know, there's a variance. There's not no class mobility, but yeah, we know how this runs in the long run, right? No, my stocks doesn't benefit society, and I'm trying best to have something when I get old. Huh? I'm not sure what you mean. To be clear, I don't think it's a bad idea for people to invest. I'm not arguing against you investing. I'm saying that there is a broader system, and the stock market is part of that system that reinforces the unequal distribution of wealth, which causes very bad knock-on effects. It's not just about your ability to buy, I don't know, to afford vacations every year or whatever. It's also that the lower a share of the total wealth is held by the working class, the less they can participate in the economy. The less they can participate in the economy, the more you hollow out the wealth that everyone else is speculating on, you know? And that's kind of why we're in a position right now where businesses are struggling to stay open, and every downtown area is seeing like mass closures in the businesses they have there, but somehow the properties the businesses no longer occupy are still incredibly expensive. That's what it looks like when people are speculating on the corpse of a once productive industry, you know? It used to be you go downtown in basically any part of America, 1980s, 1990s, robust, bustling, right? All these shops are filled. You run, you get your groceries, your, I don't know, your tools, whatever you want. But nowadays you go downtown, it's a ghost town. I mean, pardon me if you all disagree. I've been to LA, I've been to Seattle, I've been to Houston, I've been to Nashville, I've walked around. It seems the same everywhere, man. You've got strip malls in the suburbs, you go downtown, everything's falling apart. You take a look at why it's all falling apart. Well, everyone's speculating on the wealth of that property. The rent there is fucking insanely high. How is the rent in these places higher? Sorry, not Nashville. Why did I say Nashville? I meant, how am I blanking on Richmond? Sorry, I thought that. Well, wait, hold on. No, I have been to Nashville. What am I saying? I've been to Nashville. I went there for the fucking Libertarian Conference. I've been to Nashville and I've been to Richmond. Whatever, it's not relevant. That incredible wealth that speculative interest in dying businesses, that's what this looks like in the long run. What do you think the economy is going to look like when there's a, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars circulating in the speculative real estate market, but nobody can actually afford to go out and go to a restaurant? What does that look like? That's what the over-financialization of the economy looks like. And it's very, very bad. You want money to circulate down here, right? Where we can fondle it. We don't want them fondling it. Sorry, this one got away from me a little bit. I think we should probably stop talking about economics for a little bit. I feel like we're a little bit too on the pointer here, you know? A little bit too on the pointer. Thank God. Yeah, all right. Yeah. It's really dumb. Orangutan kiwi. Can we talk about the fondling the sun? Yeah, maybe. Honestly, I'm just really caught up in the basic principle that every normal person should be able to live comfortably and have both saving and spending power without having to invest. It is fucking insane that in the wealthiest country in the world, it's not commonly understood that you should be able to afford a life without investment. That's crazy. Like, you're telling me working your whole life and saving, like saving responsibly, that's not enough. You also need to get into the fucking Wall Street casino and you need to win it there too. You need to also rely on the 3% year over year annual gains and hope that your fucking, you know, your Vanguard and your 401k, that all of these continue to return year over year. So hopefully when you pull them out and you get your tax exempted retirement funds that you finally get the cash in, you hope that it's all panning out. That's crazy. Everyone's ability to enjoy their retirement relies on the 3% year-over-year gains in the wealthiest country on earth. We really can't think of a better way of doing this.